MERS is reporting that 250,000 signatures are expected to be filed today to put the emergency manager law on the November ballot. Now, Paul Kersey is with the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He has an op-ed piece on Public Act 4 that will run in tomorrow's Detroit News, and Paul is on the other end of our line. Paul, how are you?
We're just fine. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Appreciate your time this morning. Tell us about this story.
Well, what we did is we looked over the election results over the last 10 years or so for government employees in the state of Michigan. And we looked at the elections that MERC held, the Michigan Employment Relations Commission. That's the body that oversees all your government employee labor relations. And what we found was that the number of elections that you had for unions was extremely low, and that an employee could go 40, 50, 60, maybe 90 years between having a chance to vote on whether or not to have a union, and if so, which union it would be. And the reason this is important is because right now with the PA4 vote, one of the chief union talking points about this is going to be that somehow PA4 is undemocratic. Now, the fact is, it was passed by the legislature that had representatives from every community in the state, including the ones that are being affected here. And the process is overseen by a governor who was also elected statewide. But somehow this process is undemocratic. And at the same time, the unions that are saying democracy, 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 aren't being democratic themselves. They have a process set up that really can be described as one man, one vote, one time for unionization. So I don't think you can say that with any confidence that the unions really have the support among working men and women that they claim to have, at least among government employees. And furthermore, they really are kind of hypocritical about their love of democracy. If they were as concerned about democracy as they say, one of the things they should be willing to do, even eager to do, is to rework the rules for government employees so that there were more frequent elections to determine who was actually going to represent workers in all these local governments.
From your perspective, what does Public Act 4 say, and what, in effect, does it do?
Well, what it says is that while government employees have the right to bargain collectively, those unions do not have the right to bankrupt cities and counties and school districts. That's what it does. You know, Public Act 4 basically just says that when you have an emergency manager that's called into a city, and we've had this emergency manager process for decades. Among the many things that this emergency manager gets to do is he gets to go back into the collective bargaining agreements and rework them as necessary for the community's financial health. One of the things that people don't realize is just how expensive government employee costs can be. They can make up as much as 80% of the costs of a city. So if you've got a city that's in financial difficulty, odds are that there's government employee costs that are just out of line, and those need to be brought into line with what's in the private sector and with what the public can afford.
Sooner or later, though, don't unions end up coming back to the table and making the concessions that need to be made? Sometimes the process is a little bit longer than it takes, but they just want there to be a process as opposed to someone just coming in and saying, this is the way it's going to be done.
Well, first of all, they don't always come back to the table. In the case of Detroit, for instance, which is certainly a city that's in financial ruin, anybody who's driven through Detroit, let alone work there for any length of time, should be able to see that the city is in trouble. You've got contracts in the city of Detroit that have been languishing for 10 years without being replaced. So you don't always get the unions coming back to the table, and there are a number of reasons why the sort of perverse incentives that are set up under PIRA actually promote this. So you can't actually say that the unions always come back to the table. They aren't always rewarded for being reasonable.
Unions constantly keep telling us that they believe that Republicans are trying to decrease unions' power and unions' influence over people's rights to navigate and to negotiate.
Well, I can't talk about the specifically the partisan question. I can just say this. The only time you get an emergency financial manager put into place is when a city has a clear financial problem. And there's a several-step process of reviews, of examinations. The city gets several opportunities to show that it's ready to take whatever steps are necessary to get its books ready. So this is a process that is focused entirely on cities that are approaching bankruptcy and is designed to give us a chance to get them out of bankruptcy. And it's entirely reasonable that the state would do this. A lot of local government money actually does originate with the state. The state guarantees a lot of local government bonds. So the state actually is on the hook for this. The state is every bit as democratic as local governments are. So this is a democratic process designed to help cities get through financial problems. That's really all this is. And one of the things that has to happen with a city that's in financial difficulties is the contracts have to be reopened and reworked. When a local government goes into bankruptcy, when a company goes into bankruptcy, one of the many things that happens is those contracts do get reconsidered and reworked in bankruptcy court. So there's nothing here that's unprecedented. The only thing that's unusual is that we've taken a step of saying we'd like to control this process before it gets into the federal bankruptcy court. And that's all that there really is to it.
And, Paul, you know what the interesting question is, which kind of ties all this up in a bow? When you talk about unions, how many union members would stay union members if they weren't forced to do so? And how many union members would like some of their union dues back in their pockets as opposed to having them used for political or other purposes?
I think it's a fair question. And the truth is, if you look at right-to-work states, for instance, where workers cannot be forced to join a union as a condition of employment, most of them do actually wind up joining. But the unions that you get, just because they know that pressure is out there, are more accountable to workers, and that makes them less ideological playthings and more focused on what workers want to do. Jobs are certainly up in the right-to-work states, and that would obviously be something that appeals to Michiganders. And wages are actually higher, at least when you correct for local cost of living. So the trade-offs are there. I think we've got to get away from the idea that the union is always right. We've got to get away from romanticizing unions, and we've got to try to keep them in perspective of the larger society. And that would be one where local government costs are manageable, where taxpayers aren't being bled dry, basically, and local governments can pay their bills.
All right, interesting story. MERS is reporting that 250,000 signatures are expected to be filed today to put the emergency manager law on the November ballot. We've been talking with Paul Kersey from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy. He will have a great op-ed piece on Public Act 4 that will run in tomorrow's Detroit News. Thanks so much, Paul. We appreciate you.
You're very welcome.